You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this time live with voice actors Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche. In the 1990s, Animaniacs defined the humor of a generation with its edgy style, wild antics, and pop culture references. Now, with the return of Animaniacs for its second rebooted season, we participate in a roundtable conversation with voice icons Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche to talk about what makes Pinky and the Brain so endearing, and which animated characters they think could take over the world. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome.
Well, Rob and Maurice, it's great to see you guys. It's been 2 years.
Great to see you,
Dean. Oh my gosh, nice to see you, Dean. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Oh my goodness. The first question I want to ask is, what was your favorite segment of the first season of the new reboot, since we're about to go into our second season come November 5th?
I have to say that I really enjoyed the sort of Murder on the Orient Express show, that episode. That one I quite enjoyed a lot. Also because Tress MacNeille played this, you know, this very grand dame, and she's just such a gas to listen to. So I really enjoyed that one.
Awesome. I was particularly fond of the episode where Brain constructs a son. And, you know, that I got to sing a song in that, and I didn't go off key too much. They just used takes where I managed to hit all the notes and cobble them together, Frankenstein style. I loved that. I got to play a lot of emotional notes in that. It was, at the end, a very, very heartwarming show.
Well, those are two great episodes, season one. Thank you both so much. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Dean. Pleasure.
Hi, can we get your question?
Yes, for sure. So, Maurice, I have to say, for someone who gets triggered often because I have a big fear of rodents, I thoroughly enjoy watching Pinky and the Brain on my screen. Now, Pinky and the Brain is such an iconic duo and continues to liven up our screens even to this day. Now, one episode this season, we see Pinky make a video on how to take over the world. Out of all the cartoon characters besides Pinky and the Brain, of course, which cartoon character do you think would do a successful job if they had a chance to rule the world?
Oh boy.
Goodness, that's a good question. Which cartoon character would take over the world the best? Well, I think Jay Sherman from The Critic. Well, well, well. Because he has such high standards, everything stinks. His highest rating is 2.5 stars. That's just my personal favorite. I'm on a campaign to get The Critic rebooted. Let's see. Who would make... Well, I think in a Bugs Bunny world, I think things might run pretty coolly. You know, he's a cool guy. He's got some good ideas. He doesn't keep himself alive, you know.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I wouldn't want it to go to anybody like Simon Barr Sinister from the original Underdog, even though he tried to take over the world as well. Come, Cad, back to the lab to plan for... No, he never said that.
Hi, Rob, Maurice. It is a privilege to speak to you. Oh, honestly, I love your work.
To you, my friend.
Thank you. I would not complain if one day Pinky and the Brain ended up on Futurama or vice versa. But anyway,
a great idea, Maurice. Do you know anybody you could talk to?
Nobody who hasn't changed their number recently.
It's fair. Well, I was wondering to you both. Like Animaniacs, here we are back with the reboot, season two. And I was wondering what it is about this project that sets it apart from other roles for you. And what is it about Pinky and the Brain that you think people find so endearing?
I think that what sets it apart for me is that, as we've said a couple of times today, this is a love story. Pinky and the Brain really love each other. And I think one of the reasons that, it translates pretty well to the screen is that life is imitated art. I love Maurice. We are the dearest of friends. We realize, of course, this is a silly cartoon show, but
so is our life.
Right. So is our life. You know, when we do, if you're going to be authentic, acting is acting. The whole idea is that you embody these characters. You don't acknowledge the fact that it's silly or otherwise. This is the damn truth. You are about taking over the world and supporting your guy, supporting the man who or the mouse whom you believe has the best interests of the world at heart. Whether it's nefarious or not is not Pinky's MO. It's about, I believe that the brain has the best of intentions, and I'm going to do everything I can to help him achieve his goal. And he hits me on the head for doing something stupid. So that's why I think they work together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a show about, it's a show about a friendship. It's a show about a character, you know, what Peter Cook and Dudley Moore described as the uninformed idiot and the informed idiot.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Brain being the informed idiot who, though he's supposedly a genius, isn't smart enough to know that a 2-inch tall lab mouse can't possibly take over the world. And so he's rendered harmless at that point. And that's another reason people can get with him, because they know he's no danger. Of course, setting aside the fact that he's an animated cartoon. And Steve, did I detect a Canadian accent there by chance?
You did. I'm impressed. I'm from Toronto.
Well, that's because I'm from Toronto, eh?
Really?
Yeah, I grew up in Willowdale, eh? North York, eh? Finch
All right.
Leslie. Yeah.
Agent Court. Finch and
Agent Farm. Court. George Vanier Secondary School, eh?
No way.
Yeah, way. Right. Same high school as Rush.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
Rick, go ahead.
Oh, you're still muted, Rick.
Yeah, Rick, you're muted.
There you go. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I can talk again. Hey, Maurice, have you wrapped your head around the fact that this group of shows is being seen by the kids of the generation that you first entertained? And secondly, real quickly, if you had just started the show today, would you have looked at the Brain and said Orson Welles, or do you think you would have gone with a different voice?
Two good questions. Let me answer the first question, the second question first. The original design of Brain was very Orson Wellesian, and such to the point that I actually, in my hubris, believed they'd created the character with me in mind, because I was notorious for doing Orson Welles whenever there was a break in recording, whenever they, you know, and so I just thought, oh, they've created this Orson Welles lab mouse for me. It's a formality. The audition's a mere formality, my friend. So I just laid down my Orson Welles, and there we went. And he's more angular now. I don't know that I might have seen Orson Welles in there, and ergo may not have ended up with the job. So I'm glad we started it when we did. And your first question has completely left me because I'm old. Would you just state it again?
It's a generation that's watching now who's...
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. In fact, it hit me at Comic-Cons. You know, a couple of years ago, I started noticing that I already knew that the generation that watched our show had hit their mid-30s. It was when their little kids started pointing to Pinky and the Brain and wanting an autograph of a Pinky and the Brain. I went, how old is he? And they go, 10. I go, how does he know about Pinky and the Brain? Because I show it to him, you know, on the DVDs, the box sets, all of that. And now we're noticing that the dads that sat with their kids in the 90s are now the granddads and grandmoms of the little kids who are asking for that picture with their kids. Three generations are standing in front of our tables at Comic-Cons, you know, asking for autographs. So that's kind of fun.
That's really unusual too, Rick. Obviously, I think the only other show I can think of that is still in production is The Simpsons, where that would have happened. But we have gotten this incredible, glorious opportunity as a result of, you know, the stars aligning and Hulu, with a 25-year break in between. It's so unprecedented to do it again and then have all these world-class journalists talk to us about season 2, and the show is now an unqualified hit again with an exponentially larger audience. Just remarkable, Rick. Yep.
Thank you, Rob and Maurice. You both are voice gods. I appreciate it.
Now are you?
Thank you.
Very kindly.
Thank you, Rick. Lou, can we get your question?
Yes, thank you.
Hi, Lou.
Hey, Lou.
How you doing, Rob? How you doing, Maurice?
A huge fan. Very well, thank you.
I think that Animaniacs has resonated with people. Back then, it was kind of an unprecedented series, and people still wanted that even after it ended. And it came back, and you got the old audience, and you've got the new audience, and it's a boom now. So the question I have here is that when you first got, were there different voices or characters that you tried out for when you first came onto the show? And second, are there other factors that go into choosing a voice based on a concept of a character?
I auditioned, I think we all pretty much did. As Maurice has said, we kind of got first shot at everything because we all worked with Tom Ruger, the genius who created Animaniacs, and Steven Spielberg, who was also involved with Tiny Toon Adventures. And so we were all already on board and we got first crack at this stuff. And I auditioned for, I think, pretty much everything.
Yeah, me too.
Is that right, Mo? Did you?
Yeah, I read for Yakko and I read for Wacko, didn't read for Dot and didn't read for Hello Nurse, but I mean I took a crack at all three Good Feathers, and thank goodness I had just met Ray Liotta a few nights before. I happened to be next to him at a restaurant, and we ended up chatting, and so I'd had the chance to already kind of absorb his vibe just by being in his presence. Yeah. So I was good to bring that voice to it, but I. You know, we all took a shot at it. It was a cattle call of the elite of the Steven Spielberg rep company. They had about a dozen of us in and let us read for everything. And you know, it worked out as it did, and it worked out very happily.
Yeah. Then they opened it up to folks in New York, and it was for me, it was a 6-week audition. I had 5 or 6 callbacks over a 6-week period because it was a big deal. It was all a brand new, clean sheet of paper, lots of music. And it was a lot of, we'll know it when we hear it, which to me, Lou is a boon. I love it when a director or a producer says, you know what, man, I want to hear your take on this and you give me what you got. Because, if somebody says we're very specific in what we want, I can do my best, but if they've got it stuck in their head that no, that's not getting close to what I want. I love it when I have a little control over what I can, you know, what I can give them, because that's when one of those, like with Mo, when Mo walked in to read for The Brain, once he opened his mouth and did Orson Welles, they were done. That was it.
Yep. I was the first and last person to read for that character. Andre Arano told me like a year later, she didn't want to have me get a swelled head. But they didn't read any more Brains. They just then went looking for Pinky.
Had Mo not had, he calls it hubris, I call it genius. Had he not had that ability to say, oh, wait a minute. Holy smoke. I know what's going to work here. He does it. And behind the glass, they just go, what? Oh, my God. All right. All the rest of you, thank you very much. It won't be necessary. Goodbye. So that's awesome. What happens when you open it up to the actor's interpretation.
Right. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question. Hayden, go ahead.
Righty, how are you guys?
Fine, Hayden, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you. So my question is, so one of the most endearing aspects of Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain, you know, both the original series and the revival is the immense joy it takes in being a cartoon. And everything that entails.
Beautiful.
So how is this revival pushing or reinforcing even a medium that is already defined by pushing, stretching, and defying reality?
Gosh, what a great existential question about cartoons. I love the fact that we're self-aware and that we lampoon everybody, including ourselves. In fact, if you guys recall, when the revival, and that's the word I think that is probably the best one, because I keep saying reboot, but revival works better for me. When we do the theme song, the first half is the old animation, the old lyrics, and then it switches to, you know, the new stuff where we become self-aware. In fact, they even say gender balanced, pronoun neutral, and ethnically diverse. The trolls all say we're so passé, but we did meta first. That is freaking genius, because it's self-aware, and right out of the chute, before one word of dialogue is spoken, the theme song lets you know what you're in for. Yeah. And I find that really just so badass. Really.
It is, yeah.
That's all the time we have. Thank you.
Bye.